Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, your home for all things Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and so much more. Join Derek and Ian as they tell tales to astonish along this journey into mystery. Grab some snacks and settle in because Paperweight Entertainment starts now. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast. I'm your co-host, Derek Hoskins. With me tonight, as always, is my good friend and yours, the lovely, the talented, the wonderful, the beautiful, the bearded, Mr. Ian Torrance. Ian, how you doing?
Oh man, I am super excited tonight. I've been waiting all week to talk about some Loki.
I know, I'm so excited to talk about Loki. Oh, wait a minute. We're not talking about Loki tonight, you silly Billy.
Wait, what? What are they talking about?
We're talking about Netflix's own The Fall of the House of Usher from Mike Flanagan, the creative mind behind The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor and Midnight Club and Midnight Mass.
Was I supposed to watch that?
For those of you listening,
by the way,
for those
also,
of you watching,
also
looking for
also
a new co-host for the Paperweight.
Also, director of the recently reviewed on this show, Dr. Sleep.
That's right. I keep forgetting he did Dr. Sleep, which I still have not seen, and I am shamed that I haven't watched it yet.
The girl that, spoiler for those of you who haven't watched this show yet, I don't know why you're here if you haven't, but anyway, Lenore, she's the main girl from Dr.
Is
Sleep.
She?
Yeah. She's really good in that, too.
She was great in this.
Yeah, she's really good. And remember, like, Dr. Sleep came out like 3 years ago.
Too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to watch Dr. Sleep. I'm really not joking. I'm genuinely disappointed in myself. One, because Ewan McGregor is one of my favorite actors.
Two, Max?
I do. I saw it on there recently. I'm going to have to just sit down and watch it. It's hard for me to watch.
I think I own it. So
it's really hard for me to watch anything scary. I have to watch it on my phone with like an earpiece in usually because our lovely wife does not like anything scary. At all. Like, The Sixth Sense is the scariest movie she's ever seen. In her own words, she thought it was too scary. Right. Yeah. She does not like horror. All of my, like, physical media of horror. I haven't bought a horror movie since DVDs. And they're all packed away in the attic.
Do you remember the last one you bought?
Oh my gosh. The last one that I bought? No.
Or at least remember buying.
You got to remember, we've been together for 21 years.
Me and you, or you and Allie?
Me and Allie. We've been together for 21 years. We just celebrated our 14th wedding anniversary. So, did I buy any? I don't think I've bought a movie in 15 years. The last one I remember buying was Identity with John Cusack.
Okay. So, funny story. We were actually talking to this is our rant time because this episode's not going to take up a lot, even though we're doing a series recap. We do got a few things to say, but we've already talked. It's not too in-depth. Anyway, I don't think Bob was a fan of Identity.
Bob hated the end. Okay. He hated the twist in Identity.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Not Bob, the twist. He hated the ending of Identity. He hated who the killer was.
Yeah. And
because there were some physical feats that were like impossible, but I keep reminding him it doesn't matter.
They weren't real.
It wasn't real. They were all inside his head. So it doesn't matter if it was physically or possible or not. They didn't actually happen.
It's not physically possible. None of it was physically possible.
It's like, well, how did he kill Jake Busey? How did he get like the baseball bat down that guy's throat? He didn't. It's not real.
Yeah. He was killing off other fake identities.
Identities. Yeah.
Which, by the way, the reveal in that movie. Yeah, I love that too.
I thought it was
underrated.
Excellent. Yeah, it was excellent. I love John Cusack, and I really like that one. So, yeah, I think that was the last one. So, anyway, physical media, I was talking about how I don't get to watch a lot of horror.
I took a rabbit hole as usual.
No, it's fine. I don't get to watch a lot of horror.
I don't get to watch a lot of horror movies.
During Halloween. Yeah, during Halloween, during the spooky season, Allie gets frustrated with me because I'm on my phone a lot. The other day, I was walking around the kitchen making dinner with an earpiece in on my phone. She's like, "What are you watching?" I said, "Scary stuff. This is the only way I'm allowed to watch it. And God, it's Halloween time. I get 1 month a year where I'm allowed to watch scary stuff and people don't look at me weird. Like, let me watch horror movies." My wife is a lovely human being. She's not standing behind me with a gun. She really is very accommodating and wonderful. I don't want to come off like she's some kind of ogre. She's amazing. I do it out of respect, not watching scary stuff around her and the kids. My kids, unfortunately, have all taken off after her, so they don't like anything scary either. Not that they've had a lot of chance to watch anything scary, because they're all very young and they are not interested in any way, shape, or form. But either way, the whole reason why I got onto that rabbit trail is I still have not gotten to watch Dr. Sleep. I will when I actually have a chance to sit down and actually watch it where I can see it. If I'm out here in the garage working on stuff, sometimes I can throw stuff up on the TV and actually get through. That's how I watched most of this series that we're going to talk about, which, if you didn't check the thumbnail, if you didn't look at the graphic, if you're listening to the audio only, we are talking about the new Netflix series, The Fall of the House of Usher. We're going to talk about the whole series. There will be spoilers. If you haven't watched all of it, come back to us after you have, because we are going to spoil this show. Now, that was all of my ranting out of the way. Ian, did you have anything else you wanted to say before we get into this new series?
No, other than we are kind of wrapping up our spooky season. That's too soon, Derek. I don't know if I can do this.
It went quick.
For those of you that don't know, Halloween's my favorite time of year. I don't dress up. I don't really decorate. I know that's kind of counter. With that being said, look, I'm year-round Halloween.
Candy corn.
I'm year-round Halloween. I watch scary movies in the summertime, the wintertime. It doesn't matter to me. Now, we will be getting into Christmas soon. Christmas is my least favorite holiday. I actually hate Christmas, but I do enjoy Christmas movies. There are some Christmas horror movies that I actually enjoy. So I would like to get you and Bob involved in watching a few of those this year.
Yeah, I still need to watch Violent Night. I never got to watch it last year.
Yeah, I forgot that you still haven't seen that.
Which is also on streaming. I just need to be able to sit down and watch it.
But yeah, big Mike Flanagan fan. There's only a few things I've watched of his I've been like, man, that's okay. I was a big fan of, The Midnight Club, even though it was one of the more poorly viewed shows, right up there with Bly Manor. Bly Manor's not a terrible show. Wasn't a terrible season by any means. The problem with Bly Manor is it was overshadowed by Hill House. Hill House was so good.
Oh, good. Good God, that Bly Manor
couldn't hold a candle to it. If these shows have nothing to really do with each other, which they don't, they're two different stories. But if the actors were different and had no ties with Mike Flanagan, I think as a standalone, people would have enjoyed it more. Mm-hmm. With that being said, Derek and I had a conversation earlier about Mike Flanagan shows and movies that he uses a lot of the same actors. We like that. There are a few different ones from, I've noticed, like there's people from Haunting of Hill House that was in Bly Manor, but wasn't in anything else. And then there's like some actors that were in this show that I haven't, seen before. So he does trickle some new ones in there every now and again. But once he gets somebody he likes, he keeps them for a while.
Yeah,
and I absolutely like that about him.
I do too. And it people will complain about that a lot. Like people give James Gunn a hard time for always casting his wife in movies and his friends. They're all good actors. Like James Gunn's wife is good. I feel horrible and incredibly misogynistic that I don't remember her name right now. But she's a really good actress.
Mrs. Gunn.
Yeah. And but directors have been doing this forever. I mean, look at Martin Scorsese with Robert De Niro. Leonardo DiCaprio, Quentin Tarantino with Uma Thurman, Samuel L. Jackson. People do this constantly. They get into a groove an actor they like, and then they cast them in anything that they have a chance to because they have a good relationship. Tim Burton
with Michael Keaton there for a while.
Yeah, for a long time. Kevin Smith with all of his buddies that he's been running with for a long time.
So the more popular shit on the director for casting his wife, Tim Burton always casting Helena Bonham Carter and everything.
But she's one of the best actors.
Rob Zombie always casting his wife.
She's not a good actress.
I have not heard anybody complain about Mike Flanagan casting his wife in literally everything they've done.
Yeah, she always stands out too. Not in a bad way. I really like her. I think she's excellent. She has been... Now, I did not get to see Bly Manor yet. I need to watch it. Unfortunately, I didn't see it right when it came out, and so the negative reviews kind of pushed it onto the back burner for me. And I'd never even heard about Midnight Club until you told me about it.
Really?
Yeah, and so I need to watch both of those, which I will hopefully before the end of the year. I'll actually be able to watch those. I've got a long list of stuff I've got to watch. But his wife is, always the most compelling character. Like, I really like her. Agreed. I loved her in Hill House. I loved her in Midnight Mass. She was like the main character for the back half of Midnight Mass. And she was excellent in this. I loved her character in this. And her also, her, again, spoilers, her death scene is the one that made me, I was physically nervous while it was happening. Like that entire scene where she's in there with the chimps.
Woo. Yeah.
That messed with me. That whole thing. Carlo Gugino. Oh my God. Carlo Gugino. Incredible. Incredible.
Thought you were going somewhere else with that.
No. And attractive. Is that where you thought I was going? She looked amazing.
Well, she is a very attractive always woman. She's always an amazing actress, though,
she's
man.
She's so good. She's so good in this. So let's actually get into Follow the House of Usher. Of course, it's based on the works of Edgar Allan Poe, based off of like his group of short stories, which we had talked earlier. We've not read all of these. I've read The Telltale Heart, Pit and the Pendulum, and The Raven. And I think those were the ones that you'd read as well, right? Or you had not read The Raven.
I have read The Raven. I've read all of those. The Pendulum one, I don't remember much, but I do remember reading it. I feel like, and the reason I read all these was definitely high school.
Yeah, my sister had a really crazy obsession for Edgar Allan Poe when we were younger, so I was exposed to a lot of
his, I'm not going to lie to you, man. So. A lot of people, when it comes to like literature and literature in school, a lot of those guys were kind of like overrated, and I think it's because it was programmed in our brain, like, oh, well, you read it so many times in school, right. It's really not that great. Like, if they blah 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 blah. I love Edgar Allan Poe. His wordplay, the way he sets a scene. I mean, are they really short stories, or are they more like poetry? You know
they're
what I mean?
I think
they balance on either or, because they're technically stories, and that's what I like about it. They are poems, but, and I know those artsy people out there are probably going to tear me to pieces for this. I know there's a terminology for it. I just don't know it. I'm not familiar with it. I don't really get into all that. I do appreciate the style, though, and I think Edgar Allan Poe is great, and that type of writing is really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. And that was one thing that I really liked, that they actually included the poetry in this, where Roderick, the patriarch of the Usher family, would spout some verses of Edgar Allan Poe off and on.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that they actually brought in some of it, some of the actual writing, and the realization, or the mention, I think in the second to last episode, by Carlo Gugino's character saying, yeah, by the way, your brother would have been a poet in another life. I thought that was a fun little nod to Edgar Allan Poe. But overall, so we both have a little bit of an understanding of the stories going into this. We both like Mike Flanagan and his other work. So what did you think, let's go as a whole, this season compared to his others? Not just on its own. We'll talk about its own merits, but compared to his other ones, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, it wasn't. I don't know why, but I wasn't prepared for that question. I should have been. It's up there. It really is up there. It's not my favorite, but it is up there. If I had to do a real quick ranking, I'm going to definitely go Hill House. Midnight Mass is phenomenal. That's one I want to watch again. I really enjoy Midnight Club, so I put Midnight Club. I'm gonna do this one, then Midnight Club, then Bly Manor at the bottom. Midnight Club is, for those of you who haven't seen Midnight Club or heard of it, because like Derek said, it kind of flew under the radar, it's not your typical Mike Flanagan style. It is set with certain tones. It's okay, so it's basically Are You Afraid of the Dark? That's essentially right. What it is. It is about these terminally ill teenagers who all come to this manor to live, who all have different diseases, different illnesses, different ailments, and they're basically going there to die, but they're like in a more comfortable way, but they're allegedly looking for cures, trying to cure these people. And the main girl, whose name I can't remember, but the main girl, she believes that this house has some sort of mystical power. and can save her. And there's this big mystery behind it. So that part is true to a Mike Flanagan story, but it's just, they get together and they call themselves the Midnight Club, and they read in this like old library and they drink, because who gives a fuck if they're teenagers? They're dying. Right. Let them drink. By a roaring fire, and it's an old style, like it's an old house, so it's an old like table, like one of those big, long, big, thick wooden tables. You know, like one carved straight out of an oak tree. It's really, really good if you keep an open mind. They're just a bunch of short stories that teenagers would tell. So the over-the-top gore and blood and everything that most of these seasons have had, it's not really there. So I think it turned a lot of people off because they weren't expecting it. I still found enjoyment out of it. Mm-hmm. So that's the only one I thought was different from the rest of them. Everything else was, you know, he does a pretty unique style that's true to himself. Mm-hmm. Kind of like a James Wan. You could tell when James Wan or Tim Burton directs something. You know what I mean? Right. They've got their certain styles. Mike Flanagan has his, and I think it's great. So this one ranks up there. It's not the top for me, but I do have a few things that I want to touch on that were important for the story and that had me not confused, but a little like perplexed at times. Right. And I want your opinion on that to see how you interpreted these things.
Okay. Yeah. So for me, as far as where this sits along with the others, again, I haven't seen The Midnight Club and I have not seen Bly Manor. So the only ones I've seen are Hill House, Midnight Mass, and now Fall of the House of Usher. And like Ian said, Hill House, I think, is the scariest one, like hands down. It's the one that had me the most uncomfortable throughout. I jumped a lot. The imagery was really, really rough. And I loved Hill House. Midnight Mass, I think, is the best that he's done personally. So, like, I think Hill House is the scariest, but I think Midnight Mass is the better show of the two. And then this is just nipping at the heels. I thought it was sufficiently scary. I love the story that they did. The acting, everything was amazing. I still don't think it's as good as Midnight Mass, and maybe not quite as good as Hill House. But that's to say nothing negative about this series. I really enjoyed it. So that's my overall thoughts. So why don't we go ahead and get into... Because otherwise we're just going to have a praise fest of the things that we love. Why don't we go ahead and get into the things we had issues with, the confusion. Why don't you go ahead and kick us off with that?
So, okay. I don't know how much you know about the background of this. So when I found out about Midnight Club, okay, so what happened was... I fell in love with Mike Flanagan, his movies, his shows and everything. So I find out about Midnight Club. I watch Midnight Club. So now I got to know, like, I wonder what's next. Because honestly, after Midnight Mass, this was the next one I thought was coming out, was this show. But then they released something about Midnight Club. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, this kind of came out of nowhere. Like, I didn't realize I thought, you know, the next one was Fall of House of Usher and then this show. So, did you know that Bruce Greenwood was not the original Roderick Usher?
I did know that. I do not remember who was supposed to be Roderick Usher, but I did know it wasn't him.
It was Frank. Is it pronounced Langella or Langella?
Frank Langella.
Langella? I thought it was Langella, but I didn't want to look like a fool. So he was the original House of Usher star, okay? So all the posters I saw...
So good.
He was on the cover of everything.
Yeah.
And he got fired for sexual harassment on the set.
Oh, man.
Now, here's the... I don't
like Frank Langella.
Now, this is not the problem,
right?
But here's what had allegedly taken place. Now, there was an investigation. I'm not going to get too much into it. I'm just going to tell you a little snippet. Mm-hmm. According to him, this included him telling an off-color joke, giving an actress a hug, and he reiterates that they're fully clothed. You know, on mm-hmm. the set and everything. So it's not like there was anything like that going on. He gave an actress a hug and touched her shoulder and used endearments like baby and honey. And according to initial Deadline report, Langella was accused of sexual harassment, including inappropriate comments to her. Now, I don't know to which co-star. I didn't read the whole thing. I don't want to say just in case.
Mm-hmm.
He's 84 years old. Listen. I don't know the full intent of the story. Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't know all of it. I did think it was a little weird that he wasn't in it, so that's why I went and looked. I was like, don't get me wrong, I like Bruce Greenwood.
Yeah, Bruce Greenwood is great.
I was like, why was he not? Why was he Roderick and not, you know, Frank? So I'm not condoning any of that, but Netflix has said, like, you know, they don't, whatever the intention was, doesn't matter. The actress was uncomfortable. I get that.
Mm-hmm.
84 years old. I mean, dude, we're from a small town. Do you know how many people, like when I worked at Verizon, would come in and touch the girl on the shoulder, on the hand? Old women did it to me, like, mm-hmm. honey, baby, sweetie, you know, and it wasn't like they like lingered their hand and rubbed on mine or anything, but they grab your hand, they mm-hmm. grab your shoulder. Sometimes they grab you by the ass or whatever. I made that last part up. So again, I'm not condoning.
Wait a minute, that doesn't happen to you?
Not by old women, no. It's usually old men that grab me on the ass. So should he been fired? I don't know. It would have been, the point of this rant is it would have been nice to see him. I'm sorry that this happened, and it's a shame. Hopefully, you know, he's done over 100 things, and I don't know of him ever being accused of anything. So I just,
right.
I think it's weird, not impossible, but hopefully if that's true, he gets his shit together and he starts respecting women and stops being that typical old man. So. But yeah, that being said,
with that, I absolutely understand Netflix's point of view for letting him go. We're in a time now where you have to be careful what you're doing.
I was going to say, that.
And it's understandable because in all honesty, the things that we see as normal are inappropriate a lot of times. So I do agree with what you say. He's an old man, more than likely. A lot of times I've seen that myself. I've done that. Not that, but I remember when I used to work at the theater, at any time we got new employees, I would let them know, hey, I usually use, you know, terms of endearment, things like that. If I call you honey or sweetie or something like that, and it makes you uncomfortable, please let me know. I'll make sure not to do that. It's just something that we say, you know, where I'm from, where I've grown up. But at the same time, we're in a time now where if it makes somebody uncomfortable, you have to not do that. And it's not hard to not do that. So I understand Netflix for letting him go for it. It is a bummer. If it wasn't intended that way, and if it was something that he was just trying to be endearing, not realizing that he was being inappropriate, if that was the case, that would be a bummer. But I absolutely understand Netflix for letting him go, because you just it is a different time now, and it's a good thing that it's a different time now. You know, these are changes that need to be made. And hopefully he takes that and realizes, oh, I need to change how I'm doing things. And that won't happen again. We'll never hear anything else of it. Fingers crossed. Or maybe he is just a piece of garbage and it finally came out. And if so, then screw him. But either way, it is a bummer that someone of his caliber as an actor didn't get to be in this, because I would have loved to see what he did with this. As much as I love Bruce Greenwood, I think he was a standout in this. He was amazing. He was perfect in the role. But I can just imagine Frank Langella's voice and his presence on screen doing some of these scenes.
And it just would have made more sense. Bruce Greenwood, by the way, to me, nailed it. I thought he was great. Excellent. I think he's great in everything. I think he's a good actor in general. He plays the good kind of villain, even though he wasn't mm-hmm. technically a villain in the show. He was definitely villainous.
Well, he was the bad. You know? He was a bad guy.
He was like, but he wasn't a horrible guy. Like, he did some bad things, but like, that's a gray area to me, man. I know, like the body scene and like all these people died because of his prescription and everything. But like, if that's the case, then there are a lot of bad people out there.
Yeah,
that are in charge of like corporations that, you know, that's like saying, you know, no, because I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, let's move past it.
So
there's a little red dot on your chest right now.
I know, right? He knows too much.
I'm sorry, Elon. I'm sorry.
Bruce Greenwood is phenomenal. He is like 65-ish.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, because he seemed He was supposed to be the same age as Madeline in this, and while Bruce Greenwood is by no means a young man, you know, he's upper middle aged.
But the whole premise of this show was supposed to be a man at the end of his life.
That had lived a long life.
Too. That had lived a long life, was supposed to, you know, basically be on the downslope of life. Now, 67, is that getting up there? Yeah, definitely. But I could see how Frank Langella would have made more sense being in his 80s.
Yeah.
So that kind of threw it off a little bit for me. Not ruined, just kind of threw it off a little bit. And then I'm trying to find the actor's name who played Augie.
Carl Lumlow.
He's a few years older than Bruce Greenwood. So the thing is, like, Augie to me looked like he was in his 80s.
Yeah, he did. He looked like an older man. He looked older than he.
And by the way, he plays what's his name in Dr. Sleep? Halloran? Oh, Halloran?
Yeah.
From Doc. The original? Doc?
Yeah.
So
he called Danny Doc.
Yeah. But it was Halloran. He calls him something.
I can't remember.
You're right. He does have a nickname, but I can't remember.
He's got a nickname, but I can't remember.
He does. Let's call Danny Doc. Anyway, we're gushing and rambling. Moral of the story is, I thought the acting in the show was phenomenal. I thought it was great. Some of the tones, some of the shots, the scenes. Mike Flanagan's a genius when it comes to that. I think he's great in that aspect too. I will leave it at that because I do have some questions and I do have some cons. So
yeah, go ahead with the cons then.
You want me to go ahead? Yeah, you don't want to go into your...
Yeah, because I only have one, maybe two cons, and they're pretty nitpicky. I really enjoyed this show, so I'm curious of what yours are.
One of my big cons of this show was... Spoilers. Full spoilers. Yeah,
again, please.
This is going to be spoilers. Like the end of the show. So the whole thing was the legacy has to end, right? That was the deal. All the kids basically
the whole bloodline.
The whole bloodline has to die off. I get that. What I don't understand is why she was trying to hint and save some of them. Like telling not Pedro. What's his name? Pablo?
Pico? What was his name?
It's a P something, right?
Prospero.
Prospero.
Yeah.
Pedro.
Well, they called him
Samson. Right. I was way off.
They called him Perry in the show.
Perry, okay.
Yeah, so, Prospero is his full name.
So she tries to like warn him about basically greed and tells him, like, you know, you have a chance to stop this. You can stop this right now. This is your last chance. She gives him a warning. My Flanagan's wife, whose name I can't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Her character in the show was...
I can't even remember her character's name off the top of my head now.
Not Victorine. See, I just watched
this. No, recently. Victorine was the other one. It was a T name. Was it a T name?
No, she was Camille. Camille. T, you're thinking of Tamerlan.
Tamerlan,
and
yeah.
That was the crazy
Christian lady from Midnight Mass.
Yep. But Katie Siegel's a real name. Okay, so yeah. Camille... She warns Camille not to go in there, like, you know, you can turn around, you don't need to be here, you can leave. So she warns her. Speaking of Tamarine, I think.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was Tamarine. It was Tamarine.
Tamarine, yeah.
Tamberlin. Speaking of her, she tried to warn her, like, just calm down, just lay down. Why is she only warning those three? I thought keep looking at names. Leo, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
I thought Leo was the best out of all of them. I mean, he was no saint by any means.
No, like, he's a drug dealer.
He had a drug problem, but he cared about people. He was the only one that was tore up about Prospero.
Yeah, he was grieving. Like, and the only
I can't believe that nobody gives a shit. Like,
yeah.
Like, was he perfect? No. Was he a little shit? Yeah, but he was our fucking brother. Like,
right.
Doesn't matter. Like any like quarrels or any like disagreements you had, like he's still our brother. Like even if he's the bastard child, which is weird because I feel like they all were. But anyway,
yeah, four of them were the quote unquote bastards, and it was the two that would be. Which
but
I was.
He got the most shit.
Yeah, he did.
And I just thought he was very genuine, and like I get that he had to die because of the bloodline thing, but you know it wasn't his fault that the cat had initially died.
So. Well, but was it because he woke up from a drug induced stupor, covered in blood with a knife in the cat? It was implied that he killed the cat, but I don't think he did. I don't think for a second he killed that cat.
I'm not sure that he did either. And you know, for him to die the way he did was silly to me. That's what I wanted to tell you the other day.
Running and jumping off.
Him running with that Mjolnir. Yeah. Him running with that and swinging wildly on a balcony like that. I was like, who would do that? Even if you are crazed.
I didn't mind it for a couple of reasons. One, he had been doing a lot of drugs leading up to that. Two, he was literally out of his mind at that point. Like, just he had torn apart the entire apartment. To your point about the ones that she... that she warned or kind of said, hey, you can stop this. There are two for sure that I think I know the answer to. Prospero won because a lot of people died, and that was not part of the deal. He was going to die regardless, but he could have stopped all those other people from dying. And then with Cleo? Is it Cleo the... Katie Siegel?
No.
What was her name? Camille. Who's the C name? I was close. With her, she was still going to die, but I don't think that it was always going to be these horrible, gruesome, bloody deaths. Like, I think that some of them were going to be, no matter what.
She chose them, though.
Yeah, but at the same time, she said, you don't have to be here. And then while she was being the chimp, while she was, which is the scene I was talking about at the beginning, by the way, Carla Gugino imitating the chimp's movements oh my God, it was too much. Chimpanzees scare me to no end. Like when we talked about Nope. Terrifying. Yeah. Terrifying creatures. Absolutely one of the most vicious monstrosity, like just horror inducing ways that they kill things. And so her like imitating a chimp, that whole scene was just like nerve-wracking for me. But she said, you were right about Victorine. And she was like, this was going to happen, but it didn't have to happen like this. So I think that she wasn't a cruel, whatever she was, this raven, this entity. I don't know that she was cruel. She made a deal and she had to abide by those rules.
I don't think she was cruel by any means.
Which she even talked about when she was dealing with Lenore. You're like, hey, there are parts of this job I hate, but that was the deal. The whole bloodline had to go.
We're going to do that one last because that one got you and I. I will say the Victorine one made sense to me. I hate that her
partner,
her girlfriend.
Died. Yeah. Which that I didn't see it coming, by the way.
So did her snapping. Yeah. I kind of figured when she threw the thing and then they cut away and then like she can't get a hold of her and everything. I was like, oh, she probably hit her with that thing and killed her.
Yeah, I bit completely.
I didn't the Telltale Heart. Now I'm aware of the story, but I never put two and two together. Mm-hmm. It was going to be that thing,
right?
I should have, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So it was cool the way they had the way they set that up. Man, the Tamarine death was stupid too. Like she's
hers was pretty dumb,
glass, and then she sees her up on the top, and you know, do you jab at it? No, she jumps. Like to do a somersault in the air and flails backwards. I'm like, who breaks glass like that?
And again, this is the one where she was like, stop, because I feel like she was gonna die peacefully in her sleep. If she would have finally gone to sleep, I think she would have just died. I think that everything that was going on, she was constantly complaining about not getting any sleep, going crazy. I think that she would have been another one that was gonna go relatively peacefully. But I think that's why she was constantly like, hey, you don't have to do this. Don't do this. This isn't what you have to do.
And not to mention,
to this way.
She breaks the glass that's above her. She has to reach up with the thing and the glass gets underneath her somehow, and one shard gets perfectly dead center underneath of her. And I thought, come on now, you're better than
that. Yeah, I was surprised by that one too, because like the glass shattering and falling on her, absolutely. Like,
yeah,
that's a heavy mirror. Those glass shards are unpredictable. They absolutely would have fallen in a way that she could have gotten killed. But the one that was underneath her back, that was a little weird. Like, I was trying to figure out how that one like bounced on the waterbed or whatever she was on just to get perfectly like straight up and down to go right into her spine.
I agree. So the deaths were a little silly. That's why I took some points off for that. And it's not one of my favorite shows.
Freddy's death was great because screw that guy.
Freddy deserved
everything. He deserved everything he got.
Slash. And I loved her line on that. Like, I usually don't like to get my hands dirty, but I couldn't resist on this one.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause he was absolute garbage. And I love that
she say, like, once I saw the thing with the teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that they set it up perfectly too, where he was talking to his wife saying, and you're awake during all this. Like, you know, everything that's going on. You just can't move or speak. They set it up perfectly where he just had to sit there and watch as that got closer and closer and closer, which again is the pit in the pendulum. Anybody watching this, if you have not read Edgar Allan Poe's works, please go and do yourself a favor. They are dark and gothic and good. The Raven gives me chills every time that I hear it. There's a great audiobook version of The Raven where Christopher Lee is narrating. You can find it for free on YouTube. It is excellent. The Pendulum is a terrifying story that's like a torture device that gets lower and lower as you lay there and like rats nibble at your fingers because you're tied down and cannot move. It's terrifying. God, The Pit and the Pendulum. But Freddy, screw that guy. He deserved every second of it. That made me. Smiled when he pissed
death off. So.
Yeah, I smiled when he died. Screw that guy.
So, dude, Lenore, that was the saddest one. Talk about somebody deserve it. That girl was so wholesome and so sweet and so unlike anybody in that family.
And strong. Yeah. When she stood up to, because we haven't talked about it yet. Mark Hamill, like, you know that I love Mark Hamill in general. He was great in this series. Okay, they didn't do a lot. He was very quiet. He was stern. You believed that he would have been the fixer that the family needed. Hmm. And her standing up to him as a child, she's like 14, 15 years. She's young. Like, she's a teenager in this. Standing up to him and saying, no, screw you. I'm going to make another statement. I want to make another statement. I don't care that he tore my other one. That was a great scene. I kept hoping against hope that her mother had an affair and that she was not actually an usher.
Yeah.
I kept hoping, but I knew it wouldn't, because the whole point of the Raven is that Lenore is gone. My beloved Lenore, that's the whole point of the Raven, is that Lenore's gone and he'll never see her again. So I knew she was doomed, but I kept hoping because she was so good. And he and Roderick kept talking her up. He kept talking her up that she's the best of us. She's the best usher. She's the one that's the most like her grandmother. This show, man,
sucked. It really sucked. And even the entity is what I'll refer to her as, the Raven, if you will, was just like, there are parts of my job I really enjoy, I really like. And then there are moments like these that I take no joy, no pride in, and it sucks. But, it's like one of those, like, well, deal's a deal.
Deal's a deal. Got to do it. She's bound by the
deal. I love that hers was just a touch on the forehead and she immediately just goes
in her sleep. And they didn't show it. They just show her laying there in bed. They didn't show anything gruesome happening to her. She just went in her sleep. And then Madeline, I didn't care for Madeline's death at all. Like,
that is another thing I was going to touch on. That was a con for me. That it was unnecessary.
It was. Like, she was going to die anyway. The whole point was that she was going to die.
It did spawn a funny line. Is that Madeline down there? It is. I hope.
Yeah.
Some of the lines that Bruce Greenwood's, his delivery on what when he's talking to his wife, who is much younger than him,
right?
And she had that drug addiction, and then she was addicted to this drug, which, you know, the irony.
It's not addictive, though. It's not addictive. It's just going to take you 3 years to get off of it.
You get nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, severe migraines. You're going to wish you were dead, but, you know, three agonizing years and you'll be fine.
Right.
I thought, well, there's that villain that I was talking about. Like, he borderlines on villain, but I love it. Was shitty, but I love the line of, she's like, "You're a monster." And he's like, "No, sweetie, you're the monster. I'm Victor Frankenstein." I was like, okay. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, he delivers a line.
He's like, "You're my monster."
He's so good.
Put you together piece by piece. And I was like, fuck, man.
And not only that, only his line delivery, he was believably scared throughout. Like, every time that they cut back to the present with him talking to Augie, he was believably scared. And I loved his performance in that. Also, that's the other thing that I want to say. I know that we said we were going to talk about cons, and I keep talking about all the things that I love. I jumped at least once in every episode of this show. That's something that I can't say about Hill House. That's something I can't say about Midnight Mass. I jumped at least once in every episode of this show, sometimes more than that. And that was pretty impressive, because almost all of them were earned. There were a couple of them that were like I don't feel great about that one. Didn't feel great about that one, but there were a couple that made me jump for real. The jester in the limo in like the second episode, where he's going out leaving the funeral, and he opens the door and there's just a random jester like hanging out in the limo. That one got me big time. But yeah, I jumped in every episode of this. Also, I wanted to say that, again, Mark Hamill was great. He had one of the best scenes in this entire series, I think, when he was sitting down talking to Carlo Gugino and he doesn't take the deal. He says he's going to play out his cards because he on purpose didn't allow any of those ties. He doesn't have any tethers. I thought that was a great scene, showing this man of conviction who is a bad person. Like, there's no mistake about it. This is a bad person. He's a criminal. He has killed people, but he was a man of conviction, and there was respect there for him in that.
And he went out on his sword too. I thought he was just like, I know I'm probably going to go to prison for life, but I'm not making any deals. I'm going to play out my hand. Yeah. Kind of like, I did what I did, and if it catches up to me, I deserve it type thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, a lot of respect for that. And like you said, I think she had a lot of respect for him too. The whole conversation, which, by the way, her walking into the house, him just walking up, injection, wrap her up, tape her. All right.
Making a phone call.
Ready to come get her. Within seconds, I thought, fuck, man. And her being like, that was impressive.
like, she just stood back and watched it like, you are good at what you do.
Him being on that, what was he on?
Expedition. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I saw you, and I know you saw me. And I'm like, this is, again, the tension here is really good. The story is really good. Not showing a flashback was a really good idea.
Agreed.
And showing like her true form or whatever he would have saw, just kind of like foreshadowing and setting up like the end, because I am familiar. I've never read The Fall of the House of Usher, but I am familiar with the story, and I do know the ends with the house collapsing. So I thought that was a really cool touch at the end.
Yeah.
Stay true to the story. But I've got nothing else really to say about this, man. It hit on things for me. It missed on things that I brought up to you. Overall, if I was going to rate it, I'd give this show, I'd give it at least a 7 out of 10.
Yeah. The only other thing that I can think of is that the last thing I want to say is that this finale, was great, and that it absolutely wrapped up the story. I didn't know that. There, so often we see finales that it's like they forget that they had laid down mysteries this finale went through and it said, all right, we're going to explain the jester. We're going to explain the bells that he's hearing. We're going to explain what mm-hmm. the deal was, exactly what happened. One, two, three, just down the line. And it was a satisfying conclusion. It wasn't the best finale. Again, it wasn't as good as Hill House, wasn't as good as Midnight Mass, but it was a genuinely satisfying conclusion to the story they were telling. And I really, really appreciated that. So you're going to say 7 out of 10 for the, series, yeah. I'm going to say I'll go in a 7.5. Really, really enjoyable. If you haven't seen it, I don't know why you've watched this, but thanks for sticking around. There's no real sense in watching it now because you kind of heard what happens throughout the entire season. But if you have watched it, let us know what you thought in the comments below. If you are on YouTube, if you're listening on the podcast, drop us a line on any social media. We'll have posts for this this episode, and let us know what you thought about it. If you're new here, don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, ring the notification bell, and share this with your friends. If you are listening on the podcast, don't forget to rate and review us. That helps out a whole lot. We still have some very fun spooky season merchandise at the link in the description of this episode. Go and check it out and support the show. And for Ian, I have been Derek. This has been the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, and we will see you next time.